Good evening, Strong Stance listeners. I'm your host, Eli Strong, and we've got an amazing conversation for you tonight. You know, moving to any new environment always means adjustment. You know, taking a new job, starting a new family, moving to a new city. And with each of these shifts often comes a new culture and a new social circle. And while building that circle can be at least somewhat difficult for most people, it's particularly more onerous if you belong to a community that is not widely accepted or even understood. Combine that with any other minority status, and the intersectionality of those identities can compound those adjustments. And what if that new culture is one that tends to be significantly more conservative? Well, tonight we have two guests that have recently made moves from larger cities in the North and Midwest to the deep South state of Georgia. And we're going to talk to them about their experience of adjusting to Southern intersections. For those familiar with the show, you may also be familiar with our first guest, Melvin Whitehead. He's been a guest, co-host, and storyteller several times previously. Melvin is a Black trans man living in Georgia. He's a first-year doctoral student at the University of Georgia, where he studies college student affairs. Melvin's research interests include the experiences of LGBTQ students at community colleges. Melvin, once again, for the umpteenth time, I want to thank you so much for being here. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for having me on the show.
Our next guest is a newcomer to the show, but someone that I have known for a few years. It's Morgan Rich. Morgan lives in Atlanta and works as a software engineer for a New York-based youth social change organization. He's been a brother of Onyx, a leather fraternity for men of color, since 2012, and joined the Southeast chapter after moving from New York in 2015. He's proud to be part of the Built Leather family, and he has also served as Mr. American Rubber 2014. Morgan, how are you?
I'm doing great. How about you?
I'm good. Thank you so much for taking the time for this conversation.
Thank you for having me on the show.
So I really want to talk about some of your experiences, both of you. Melvin, you've lived in Chicago and D.C., which is originally where we met. And now you are in Athens, and Morgan, we met when you were in D.C. and you lived in New York, and now you're in Atlanta. So, Melvin, just off the cuff, kind of initial, what are your differences in geography, in the feel of the climate, both temperature and otherwise? Like, what was some of the first things that you noticed different about some of the larger cities that you've lived in Athens?
Well, the very first thing I noticed was that it's really hot. and the heat and humidity are particularly oppressive here. But other than that, you know, I've noticed that I've become, you know, this is my first time living in the Bible Belt. And even though I'm a Christian, I feel that it's a different kind of Christianity than the kind of Christianity I had access to in Chicago, particularly. It's more difficult to find progressive Christians and LGBT affirming mm-hmm. churches in Athens. I'm assuming there's more of that in Atlanta. So I feel like the culture here is very Christian. Like it's like so many churches, like just everywhere. That's an adjustment. So I've been more conscious of the intersection of my queer identities and my Christian identity.
Yeah, it's funny that you say that, because not only when I moved back from D.C. did I kind of feel that, but I also felt it not just from the cis and hetero communities. I would even meet like queer couples, granted white cis queer couples, that one of the first questions out of their mouth was, do you have a home church? Are you looking for a church family? And that was something that I never got asked mm-hmm. when I was in DC. Eventually we would get to that in a conversation. It's not that I wasn't friends with people who were spiritual or religious. It was just that wasn't one of the first conversations or sentences that I was asked. And that was a little bit odd, particularly when I was having those conversations in gay bars at 3 o'clock in the morning on a Saturday, when I was like, are you really going to be able to wake up tomorrow morning and get to church? Because I'm going to be sleeping late after this night. So, Morgan, did you have experiences like that when you moved to Atlanta? Did you feel like it was more religious than where you were previously?
The funny thing is that the part of Atlanta that I live in feels very much like many of the other northern areas that I've been in. Atlanta itself feels like a very, very blue area and like a sea of red. I haven't had anybody around me really be particularly religious. There's a few churches in my neighborhood, but I think most of the people that I've met in Atlanta, honestly, aren't even from Atlanta. So it's like a rare thing that you run into somebody who's actually like a quote-unquote real Southerner here. Those conversations haven't come up. I've actually met a lot of people who moved from Brooklyn and more people that have moved from like Chicago and California and stuff. So I guess I'm still having the same conversations with people here that I was having up north too. So.
Yeah, I mean, I think that that's interesting that you say that. I know a lot of people from Atlanta that live in Atlanta, but I know even more people from Atlanta that live in the suburbs. And so are you finding it to be more of like a transient community similar to like a DC or a New York where you go there for either jobs or just a different experience and not necessarily because you were raised there?
Yeah, I wonder if it's transient. I'm still not sure if it's transient like New York and DC. I wonder if people aren't coming to Atlanta to like settle down and finally get the kind of quality of life that they couldn't get from more expensive cities like New York and D.C. That was part of why I came here. There's what's happening in Atlanta, and I think this is happening in a bunch of other cities in America, especially like second-tier cities like Atlanta. People are moving from the suburbs and into the city, or at least the city is having this resurgence of like people moving in and development happening. Young and hip or whatever, I guess you have a bunch of yuppies or the newest wave of yuppies are sort of colonizing the city. And that's what's happening here in Atlanta. So
interesting. I spent some time in Atlanta and I know that there are a lot of people that are looking for that quality of life. What's even funnier is that I'm running into a lot of people that are leaving Atlanta because they feel like Atlanta is too fast and they're moving to even smaller towns. So that would make sense that the folks that are from like the New York and DC that aren't quite ready to make a full stop and just ready to slow down would still move into Atlanta, or the folks that are, you know, looking for something a little bit more affordable, but not necessarily suburbs. But that's interesting to know.
It's funny to me that you say that people are moving out of Atlanta because it's too fast, because I constantly find myself yelling at people to like, please hurry up. Why are you going so slow? I have places to be.
That is the truth. Yeah, I found that once I moved up to D.C. from Alabama, when people would come to visit me, they would be like, why are you walking so fast? And I'm like, this is how I walk. I don't know, right? It was just a different thing when you go from a smaller area to. Are you having that problem, Melvin? Are you trying to move people out of your way in Athens?
I feel like, having moved from D.C. to the Midwest and now the South has definitely slowed me down. I think of the Midwest as also slower than, the Northeast or the Mid-Atlantic, or particularly, places like D.C. and New York. But I will say, though, I was in Atlanta just Friday, and I remember my friend was driving, and I was like, I just realized, people don't really honk their horns in Athens. You're supposed to just wait. Like, if you're at a light and someone is like, and the light turns green and the person in front of you doesn't move, it's just, you just sit there and just, you don't honk your own horns. And I don't think I've heard any car horns honked really since I've been in Athens. And I remember I was in Atlanta on Friday and people drive like at a, more chill pace in Athens, but in Atlanta, like people drive a little bit faster, but still not like, like a big city, like big northern city, like way of driving. And then I heard someone honk their horn. I was like, when they honked their horn in Atlanta, I was like, oh, wait, it's been a while since I've heard this, because people don't do it in Athens.
Yeah. So Morgan, you said something about that the part of Atlanta that you live in and that it is still part of the city. And, I figured that your experiences are going to be different because Atlanta is a totally different animal from Athens. Without UGA, Athens is probably doesn't exist really much on the map. There's no airport there. There's a regional airport there, but it's not. It is a college town, period. And so, Melvin, what have been some of the more difficult adjustments that you've had to make being in a more rural area, further away from a major city, then maybe that kind of caught you off guard that you weren't really prepared for?
Well, one of the things I was thinking about related to that was how I haven't seen many people who are queer and how they dress. And so one of the things I've been sort of changing up over the past year was how I dress. I've embraced booty shorts over the past year. I just love booty shorts. Like, if I'm not working, like, I am in booty shorts. And I love the fact that it's so warm here for so long, and I can just wear booty shorts all through October, probably. and also other, like, sorts of, like, just feminine dress. And I was at, I think I was at Sam's Club last week getting some toilet paper, and I walk in with my booty shorts and this purse that was really cute and, like, these cute shoes. My outfit was, like, on point, and I was feeling so cute or whatever. And then this woman, like, stares. Like, she, like, was hardcore staring at me. Like, in a way, like, you know, you cut someone staring at you and they usually turn away. But I caught her. She, like, continued staring, like, this, like, dirty stare. And I was, like, and I was staring back at her. I was, like, you know, what the fuck? So that was something that felt new to me. And, like, I'm feeling, like, more conscious of how I'm dressing. Because even when I was in the Chicago suburb, like, I was living outside of Chicago, like, an hour outside of Chicago, even there, I felt relatively safe with how I was expressing my gender and not really being super conscious of what I was wearing. But here, that's definitely been the case. It's also more formal here. I feel like people just, like, dress up more, especially, like, on college campuses. Like, I was looking at the syllabus for one of my classes, and it's not, like, a dress code, but it says something about professional dress. And apparently, like, the football games, people wear button-down shirts, and I'm just like, wow, this is definitely different. So how people dress here is just one thing that I've picked up on.
Yeah, well, I can tell you from experience, being on a Southern college campus, that there is something about being Southern and that idea of the Southern gentleman, particularly when it comes to game day. That, I mean, I can tell you when I was at the University of Alabama at football games, the women that go to football games that are in sororities are required to wear, or at least they were, most sororities require you to wear heels and dresses, and the guys were required to wear slacks and button downs and sport coats. In September at a football game outdoors, right, where it's very, very warm. Now, a lot of the other students will probably wear polos or jerseys or no shirt and paint themselves. You'll see a lot of casual folks at football games, but you do walk around and go, like, I don't wear the type of button downs on that often. Like, there's a lot of kind of yuppie dress on Southern college campuses. And what's funny is I've noticed, I mean, you said it seems a lot more formal, but the way that you dress, because, I mean, you and I have had dinner since you've moved down here, and I feel like you outdress, obviously you will always outdress me. Your wardrobe is always more on point than mine is. But even to the point of some of the things that you wear, I would consider more formal than, I'm basically saying I find it a little bit surprising that you find their dress as formal. I feel like you fit in great in Southern culture, except for the height of your shorts. And I mean, that's something that's going to be a classically, folks are going to go, he must be gay because he's dressing well and it's not khakis and a polo like frat boys wear.
Right. It's like a queer, it's not like particularly feminine, it's just a very queer way that I dress. And I feel like, but I think what the difference is, like, it's expected that I dress formally. And I feel like where I've come from, like, I've, you know, like, at least at my last job where I was in Joliet, Illinois, you know, people would consider that I would, like, overdress. And it wasn't necessarily, like, expected. It wasn't, like, a norm. It wasn't expected that I dress this way. Here, it's expected that you dress this way. And I dress the way I dress because I want to. And I guess it feels different that there's this expectation. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, absolutely. Morgan, what, I mean, do you feel like, do you see some of the very Southern, very white, kind of dress that Melvin and I are talking about? Or, I mean, are you in a different area where there's a lot more diversity in clothing and presentations, particularly gender presentation through that clothing?
You know, I think it was interesting. As soon as I heard Melvin say that, it made me think about one of my most recent trips to the grocery store. I looked around and everybody, I was like, I must live in the queerest place in Atlanta, because it wasn't just like, gay black men that I saw, which I see all over Atlanta, and I see gay black men more here than I've ever seen anywhere else, and it's an amazing thing. But it was just like, obviously, queer presenting folks everywhere in my neighborhood and in my complex where I live. I see those folks, so I haven't seen much of that Southern dress that you're talking about. I think it would be interesting to actually see that, and I think, but and I also think that it would only require like a 20-minute drive, north, south, east, or west, to see that.
Or
too.
Less, yes.
Right, exactly.
Yeah,
Morgan,
well,
I think you should come
until,
to Athens.
Yeah, for
I'll
real.
Definitely do
I mean,
that.
I think that we should all do field trips to all different the cities that the three of us live in, and
yes.
Look at the difference of dress and presentation and lack thereof. And look, the moments that you start seeing the seersucker come out of the closet, oh bud, seersucker everything, seersucker dresses, suits. Like I once saw a seersucker bra in Lane Bryant. Like what is this?
I'm not
so
mad at the seersucker though. I have me a pair of seersucker shorts.
Wow. Hey, there's nothing wrong with seersucker. I'm just surprised at the level that folks take it when I'm like, don't y'all just want to be in shorts and you're in like a full seersucker suit? What are you doing?
Oh, yeah. That's a lot, definitely.
Morgan, it sounds like you are getting a lot more of the, you know, the diversity in people that you would see in a New York or a DC or Chicago or things like that. Do you ever feel like you are one of only very few black folks or queer folks or whatever the case may be, like quote unquote in the room in any facet of your life in Atlanta or in any other places? I know that you travel a lot with your job, although mostly I've seen you leaving the country. But do you ever feel like that in the South, or at least where you live in Atlanta, as opposed to somewhere else in the South that you may have visited since you moved?
I mean, the thing that I can say about Atlanta is actually it's been exactly the opposite. I've never been in a place where there are so many people like me in the room. And it's seemingly all the time, and not in a place where I'm trying for that to happen. I just happen to see black queer folks all over the place. And I didn't get a chance to go to Black Gay Pride yesterday, but it's as if you don't really need to go to Black Gay Pride because that's every day here. And I really, you know,
right.
People say that I know Atlanta is geographically in the South, but I don't think Atlanta is really the South. It's not reflective of the South at all. And I mean, other than like what Waffle House or something like that, like that's the only like real Southern thing I feel like about, you know, if you talk about like real Southern in terms of like traditional things, I think the only, thing that I've really noticed, in terms of like being the only one in the room is, so like, I like to go to, our Onyx Bar Nights. We do those like the first Friday of every month. And this past Friday, of course, it was Black Gay Pride at the Eagle. And so I walk around in a jock strap, and some of the other brothers do also. But there's a large – I mean, the bar was packed, and we usually get a large crowd of black gay men to come in for DJ Ron Tolman, who's a house DJ. Mm-hmm. And what I find is I get these, like, really judgmental looks about – having next to no clothing on. I see people whispering about it, but it seems very like very jealous, like they wish that they could be as free and walk around, you know, with their ass out or like with next to no clothing on, but they feel very much like regimented and afraid to really be open and really be out. I've met more men down here who are not out than I've ever met anywhere else. Like, it seems as if black gay men that I've met here almost in some cases are living two lives, or they, like, they're just away from their families and they just don't, just happen to not mention that they sleep with men or that they're in relationships with men. So when you're in a bar with a bunch of people who, like, are getting their life in that bar, but they may not be able to be like bringing their whole selves to work every day. It's like a very different kind of feeling going on. And I would love at some point to like open up dialogues and discussions with folks and hear what people have to say, but you know, the bar isn't really like the best place to do that, so.
Right, right. And look, in the South in general, we are more modest, right? There's a lot to be said about exactly what you're saying about wanting to be more free but feeling more regimented. It's more modest in the South. People also talk a lot in the South and usually not to your face, behind your back. And if you're smart, right, from a small town, you know, I could totally see that. And I also wonder, like, how much freedom do you feel like you have as someone that does not have to, like, your work situation is based in New York. How much freedom do you feel like possibly your work situation gives to the rest of your life, because you don't have to worry about losing a job that is based in Georgia and they can go by state laws and fire you for no reason whatsoever? Like, do you feel at all like maybe having that experience frees you up to be exactly the human being that you are?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, and it's not just because I work for this remote company and things. It's also like I happen to work for like a very queer friendly company, and like half of the people there are queer in some way or identify as queer. And the company really embraces LGBT rights and tries to stand up for those things. And so I absolutely feel like it's an enormous amount of privilege to work for a company like that, where there are people who I work with who know that I frequent the leather and kink communities, and it doesn't matter. No one cares. But I also know people in the kink communities who, if anybody knew that they came to these events and stuff, they would be fired. So, like, I understand why people can't be open and sort of share their whole lives with folks. It's not necessarily a judgment. It's more just an observation of what I've seen.
Oh yeah, no, of course. I just want to make I was just wondering, because you've had this great experience in Atlanta, and I'm wondering, do all people get to have that experience in Atlanta, or as free as you can be in Atlanta, there's still the worry that, you know, Georgia is an at-will state when it comes to work, and you can be fired for anything. And I was just wondering whether you've seen that in some of the circles that you've run in Atlanta.
I think I've seen it in terms of the kink community, definitely. People being afraid to come out as kinky, not so much as gay. I think that has changed quite a bit. And there are many, many companies here who support LGBT rights, or they don't sort of care one way or the other.
Right. I went to an Atlanta Pride long before I went to a Pride probably anywhere else. And when I was growing up in Birmingham, because Atlanta was the place where when you were a queer kid in Alabama, you dreamed of moving out to a big city like Atlanta, right? You never thought about D.C. or New York. Half the time you were like, how am I going to afford to get there? Atlanta has always been kind of this queer beacon in the South for folks that were from Mississippi or Alabama or Tennessee or other parts of Georgia. And you know, I've seen that. I've also just wondered, would it be different if I was actually living there? Melvin, do you feel like, what are you seeing? First of all, how long have you been in Athens?
I am coming up on my 1 month anniversary in 3 days.
Okay. And you're also extremely busy at the moment, right? So not only still new, but you're swamped.
Right.
So, but on the rare occasion that you do get a chance to go out, like what are you seeing in Athens as opposed to maybe trips to Atlanta or things like that about the way you interact with the other people that are there, or but B, the diversity of not only race or ethnicity, but also are you running into other queer people? Are you running into other queer people of color, like in Athens, as opposed to when you possibly make trips to other areas of Georgia?
Well, I've only been to Atlanta once since I've been down here. I went there last Friday, and I was listening to Morgan talk about, like, it's like Black Gay Pride there, like, every day. I'm like, oh, my gosh, I wish that was my life. I've met queer people here, but I'm here as a student, and so I feel like my experience is just very much shaped by the student relationship I have to Athens. I feel like I live not only in the college university bubble, but also the student affairs bubble, because my field is very queer. Like, student affairs is a very POC and very queer field. And I'm coming from also a librarian career. So the career that I left was very white and very female, and now this field is just very different, like night and day. And so the queer people I've met through my program. And so one of the people that's in my program, she's in my cohort. She's also, a director of a center here on campus. And so I told her the other day, you're kind of like my queer welcoming committee, because, you know, she's taken me out. I've met people. She's been great. And so through her, I've already met other queer people. And actually, I was just studying with her earlier today. And so I feel like the lens that I'm experiencing Athens is very much, colored by my relationship here as a student. In terms of queer people of color, that's been lacking. So there's one queer person of color in my program that I've, hung out with. The person I mentioned, the queer welcoming committee person, her partner is Black. But, it's far and few between queer people of color here. And, I feel like that's something, one of the things I had, ready access to when I was living in Chicago. Like, most of my friends were queer people of color and trans people of color. I forgot. I met a guy who's in the master's level of my program, and he's a black trans man, and he lives right next to me. Like, when I found out he lived next to me, I just, freaked out.
But
that person down here, when I meet a Black trans person, I want to cling to them, because I was oh my gosh, literally the only other trans, Black trans person, trans person of color I've met since coming down here, and he lives right next to me, and it's just awesome. I had him over for cookies. I made cookies and had him over.
Cookies.
That's how I make friends right now. I make salted caramel chocolate chip pretzel cookies that people
listen.
Tend to
I'm
like.
Driving from Atlanta for that. I'm coming all the way.
Yeah, for real.
I can smell them from here.
So you are not finding a lack of diversity. You are finding a lack of diversity.
I am, sorry.
It sounds
so
like your program is kind of diverse, but I didn't know if there was other things that you were noticing around campus or out socially on the times that you do get a chance to go out.
Right. So outside of my program bubble, it is very lacking in diversity. So even with just regards to Black students, I'm around campus, I take the campus bus, and I'm walking around campus, and I don't see a lot of Black students. And it turns out UJ is only 8% Black in terms of the student body. And there are far more Asian students on campus than Black students, which I've never seen on a college campus before. And even walking around Athens, I see white people, I see Black people a little bit, but I don't really see people of other backgrounds. Today. I was in a part of Athens called Normal Town, I saw a Latino grocery store, and I saw Latino folks. I was like, oh, this is where the Latinos are, because I hadn't seen them. Since coming to Athens, and even before coming down here, it was my sense that Athens was very Black and white, and not very much of any people of other backgrounds. And so this is the first place I've lived where it's like that. I'm used to people, Chicago is a hodgepodge of different racial and ethnic backgrounds. DC is the same way. Georgia, not so much.
Yeah, no. And actually, that's pretty indicative of the Deep South itself. Growing up in Alabama, and even this town that I live now, and I think that the last consensus of this small town Not consensus. The last census of this small town that I currently live in is, I want to say that it was 63% Black, 46% white, and 1% other. Someone don't check my math. But basically, it was, it was just white and Black. And that is very much the case in a lot of southern areas that aren't cities. There's just not, you get into Texas, obviously you're going to see a lot more. There's a growing Latinx community in, outskirts of Birmingham, because Birmingham is somewhat of a larger city. But, I feel like I see a little bit more diversity when I go into Atlanta. Morgan, do you see more than just the Black and white? Are you seeing a lot more folks similar to what we would see in D.C. or New York when it comes to different ethnicities?
Not really. I'm seeing a lot of just black and white for the most part. But that may just be because I work from home and I feel like I almost never go outside. But yeah, for the most part, yeah, I'm just seeing mostly black and white folks here.
And I just want to add that my
No, go ahead.
I was gonna say, you know, my perception, you know, I know you can't always like read, you know, people's races accurately. Like, and also I know that there are black people who are also Latino, and you can't necessarily tell someone's racial background. But I think one of the things I was trying to get at maybe Morgan as well was that, you know, there's that the visibility piece isn't there. You know, we don't, you know, there might be some Afro Latinos here in Athens. Who knows? And actually, someone in my program does identify as Afro Latino, and I didn't know until he told me. So I just wanted to make sure that I was clear on that.
Yeah. And my biggest point about the white versus black visibility versus lack of visibility is that what ends up happening, though, and this is something that I grew up with a lot, especially when I was in college at Alabama, is that the word diversity means something different in the South than it does in other larger cities. The word diversity, when people say in the South, we need to work on our diversity, they generally just mean we need more black folks, right? They don't think about other religions. They don't think of lack of religion. They don't think of, you know, other ethnicities or backgrounds. They don't think of sexual orientation, gender identity. A lot of times when I was in college in the late 90s and early 2000s, it was when somebody said the word diversity, it just meant that there weren't enough black folks represented, right? We weren't talking about women or anything like that. And that is something that I kind of forgot, right? It's, you always remember it. It's on the periphery when you forget some of these things. It's kind of like riding a bike. You get out of that environment, and I was in D.C. for 10 years, and when I came back, I forgot about that. When I said something about it not being diverse around here, and someone told me, well, actually, we have a larger black population in our town than we do white folks, I was like, that is not at all what I'm talking about, right? And so it was just, it was a different, it's not often that definitions of words clearly just change. And that was something that I forgot. The definition of the word diversity down here changes because mm-hmm. that's what folks are looking at a lot of times. And I, you know, you have to wonder, how does that play into our daily lives and the adjustments that we make when we're used to have being surrounded by faces and lived experiences that are in a myriad of ways different from ours, regardless of what we look like? How does that affect us when we move to an area where you're either A or B, and mm-hmm. otherwise you don't really exist, right? So I don't know if either of you have kind of had that experience or you've run across other people. Like I know a guy that identifies as both trans and Latinx, but he appears very white. And so most of the time he just gets lumped in with the white folks. And when somebody goes and when he's like, no, you know, they don't understand that, well, you're not black. So clearly you must just be white because there is no other diversity that people really think about at the top level of their brain. I'm not saying that if you don't push them on it, they don't recognize that folks exist. But it's almost like when someone sees somebody that's, Latino, they just immediately go, the Mexican guy. And I'm like, what? That's not how this works. So I don't know if that's something that Morgan, is that something that's similar in Atlanta that you find folks using language that is very much that it clearly shows that they've only been around black and white folks, or is there a recognition that there's something other even if you don't see it around?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's one of those things. So the people that I do hang out with in Atlanta tend to be socially conscious or they tend to be activists or something like that. So they're more aware of like the language that they're using. Other than that, I do find myself like cringing quite a bit when people aren't familiar with social justice things, because I do hear a lot of folks, especially white folks. There was a recent discussion that happened when I was out camping, and you know, a group of white folks were talking about different foods, I think, to describe different types of people of color. Like, it's of course black folks were chocolate, and then I just shut off. I just was not listening to the rest of it. So, and these were queer trans people, and but they were white folks, and they're Southerners. So that's one of the mm-hmm. things that I have discovered here is that just because you're queer and trans doesn't mean that you know anything about race,
right?
Or that you care, or that you think that you should learn something about it. So I've come across that, and it's been sort of an interesting balance between these people are ridiculous. Is every conversation with them going to be about educating somebody, or do I just stop speaking to them, or do I just like kind of let it slide and like whatever, people are going to be people, and you know, try to get in some knowledge where you can. But I think that's one of the only like sort of eye-opening things that I've discovered since I've been here. So, I mean, I know that doesn't speak necessarily to what you were saying about language around like other types of people other than black and white, but it came to my mind, so I wanted to mention it.
No, but I think it does. I think that by being, like you said, that you can be queer, you can be whatever, and especially if they're from the South, growing up in a bubble where all you see is white versus black, there are a lot of folks in the South that kind of feel like if I'm not riding around in a hood and a white uniform, then I'm not racist.
Right,
or that I know what's going on. Just because I know a couple black folks means that I'm fine and I don't have any kind of internal baggage to deal with. I know trans people with Confederate flags and get no issue as to why that's a problem.
Yeah. Yeah, I hadn't seen Confederate flags like just out and about until I came down here. And I'll see them I don't see them that much in Atlanta, but I'll see them every now and again. I'm like, oh, that's right, I'm in the South. I forgot about that.
Yeah. Melvin, are you seeing more of that, you know, the Confederate flags or things that kind of make you cringe? Like, are you seeing that yet in Athens?
Yeah, you know, I'm in the bubble of the university here, and I don't really leave my house much except to go to class. But I have seen Confederate flags on, like, cars somewhat. My first weekend here, actually, I went on a retreat with some students as part of my assistantship, and we drove, like, an hour, maybe like an hour and a half away from Athens, and we're, you know, driving down these rural roads, and I saw a Confederate flag outside someone's house, and I was like, whoa, like, I don't think I've ever seen that before. Like, I've never seen a Confederate flag just like waving, you know? And I was like, wow, this is it. And I even look at, you know, the buildings here differently, you know, thinking about Georgia's history with segregation, with slavery. That's very much, you know, and UGA's history of segregation, it's very present for me in a way that it wasn't before. Like, these are things I knew about, but now I'm living in a place where, you know, some shit went down, you know?
Right. That's like, I would shield some of my friends that come down here from cities to visit, mm-hmm. you know, because I've had a couple friends that are like, am I going to be safe if I come down and visit you? Like, that's a legitimate concern that black queer friends of mine have. Am I going to be safe if I just come down and visit you for a weekend?
I think it's really interesting that you bring that up because it reminded me that for the longest time I was afraid of the South. Mm-hmm. Growing up in Philadelphia and having a father who was born in 1936 who had experienced racism in Philadelphia in some very visceral ways and physical ways. Like, the South was a terrifying place for me to even think about coming to. So it's really fascinating for me to be in Atlanta, and Atlanta, again, doesn't feel at all like the South. And then even to, like, go to Augusta, Georgia, to some gay spots, and go to Dewey Rose, to the campground and stuff, and to meet, like, white, gay, older Southerners who are about as friendly and as nice as they can be. But, like, you know, you get that there's, like, a little bit of an undertone of something else there. But mm-hmm. they're just about as friendly as anybody can be, you know, will share whatever they have with you. So like the South certainly doesn't feel scary and, like a place that I shouldn't go, anymore.
Right.
Not from like average citizens. It feels that way. If law enforcement is involved, right? I mean, but that's kind of a problem everywhere too. So, yeah, I just, that came to mind.
You know, that's interesting that Morgan said that. I was having a conversation with someone in my program, in my cohort, who's a black man who lives just outside of Atlanta. And I was asking him about, you know, the racial climate here. And he was saying to me, you know, if you're in Athens or in Atlanta, you're fine, but I would not ever go to, like, if you're driving, you know, from one place to the other, don't stop at a gas station in between, unless it's like these specific places. And, you know, it's not safe. You know, as a black person, I would not feel safe. And to hear him say that there are places he did not feel safe in 2016 as a black person, like, not, I mean, aside from, the, you know, the police, you know, conversation, but mm-hmm. just in general, like, that really shocked me. I was like, I've never, you know, had to think about safety in terms of, like, where I stopped for gas when I was living in, like, Chicago or even just on the eastern, you know, northeastern seaboard. That said to me, like, okay, this is the safe. My safety is something I'm going to really seriously consider in terms of where I'm at night, and also what I'm wearing.
Right. You know, I totally hear you, Melvin, on the bubble of being at a university, because, you know, Southern college campuses tend to be this tiny bubble of a little bit of blue. Even if it's not, right, it's a little bit easier to move throughout one's environment on a college campus than it is outside of that college campus. But I also have to wonder, is it enough, right? Because it's great that it's a little bit of a bubble away, but do you feel completely safe when you're going to class? Do you feel completely seen in who you are and not judged? Do you feel like you're given the same space that you would be given in a Chicago or a D.C. or a New York?
Again, I think it's also the bubble of my particular field and department. And so my field is in student affairs, and I also have an assistantship in student affairs, and they are super progressive spaces. In fact, they're both, we talk about social justice, we talk about critical race theory and intersectionality, like, all the time, both of those spaces, both in class and where I'm doing my assistantship site. And so in those spaces in particular, I feel very safe. But if I was walking down Fraternity Row, or if I was, you know, in some other space on campus, definitely not as much. No.
Yeah. So, you know, we've talked about kind of y'all's, you know, your living environments, like what is it like walking around socially, things like that. But are there things that are going on in the South, particularly Georgia, since that's where we are, but are there things going on as far as legally or politically or anything like that that is concerning to you as queer people of color, as trans men, that we haven't talked about? Not like, yeah, you meet the nicest people, but what about the people that we voted in office? What about the laws that are on the books that really can kind of, when it all comes down to it, it's not legally an easy place to be. Are there things that you're coming into contact with or that you are concerned with about that, about being in Georgia?
I mean, I was, you know, seriously grateful and breathed a sigh of relief when Nathan Deal vetoed the bill that was supposed to be like HB2 here in Georgia.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and
the religious freedom bill.
Mm-hmm. Right, the religious freedom bill. And primarily that happened because he didn't want all of the, like, there's a lot of movies made in Georgia. And there's a lot of entertainment and a whole lot of other industries that were like, well, we'll take our money elsewhere. So if for some reason, you know, these financial interests no longer feel like it's important to protect LGBT people, you know, then those things will be passed with no problem. So that's concerning.
Right.
But I'm happy that our governor has made the right choice in a couple of occasions to make sure that economically, Georgia continues to be competitive by allowing and welcoming everybody here,
right,
and making this sort of like this oasis in the South. So there isn't too much else though that I've heard coming up that deeply concerns me though from the Georgia standpoint.
Melvin, what about you?
Well, I'm still getting a sense of the political climate here. But one thing I would say that's concerning to me is that Georgia is one of the states that's suing the federal government over the Title IX directive regarding trans students. I think that, you know, that juxtaposed with UGA's kind of interesting. You know, it's
it's a place, and I was asking people here, I was like, you know, what's your sense of the administration's position on this? And it's really had a chilling effect in terms of, like, trans advocacy here on campus. I know that our LGBT center receives no state funding, so it's relatively under-resourced compared to other centers on campus, but it could be a good thing because then, you know, I guess the LGBT centers have to worry about, you know, funding suddenly being pulled from the state if, you know, whatever happens with this Title IX stuff. But I'm seeing how the effect that it's had on UGA's campus in terms of, like, UGA is obviously beholden to its, you know, its board, and, you know, that means they can and can't do certain things. So I think that the Title IX issue is really, it concerns me, but also interesting. I'm interested to see what happens with it in the coming months.
Yeah, I think that, you know, we live in an area in Georgia, well, just Georgia in general, where I have in gas stations walk in where there are very clear signs that basically say that, you know, men must use this restroom and women must use women's restroom regardless of how you're dressed, is I think the way that one sign was worded. This was a printed out sign, or either that or handwritten. It was below. I'm not talking about the signage of men versus women on the door. I'm talking about pasted below or taped below was a sign that was written out by either management or someone that worked there that basically, you know, was telling people what bathrooms to use. I think that I find it legally interesting after living in D.C. for so long, the number of single-use restrooms that I walk into that are gender. When there is literally nothing else in there except for a toilet and a sink, right? Like, is there a need for this to be, say, male versus female? I also, though, when it comes to especially Athens, I would not have those conversations in a smaller town. But in Athens, especially at nicer places, I went into this nice newer restaurant. It's only been open for about a month. Great food, you know, very nice people. And they were like, you know, we've only at the time. They were like, we've only been open for 2 weeks. And, you know, so any suggestions that you have, you know, how was the menu? How was the wine? Like, whatever. And I was like, honestly, I have one suggestion for you. And he said, what's that? I said, why do you have single stall bathrooms that are marked as male versus female? Because, and I went ahead and outed myself because I felt safe enough. I was also walking out the door to my car and I was speaking to the owner of the restaurant. And I said, you know, as a trans person, that's something that if I did not feel safe, I would not come back. Simply because of your bathroom. And he was like, you know, I know that that is something that is of issue. I've been watching the news. He said, but I've never thought about that. And honestly, I don't care whether you like who I am or agree with who I am. If you want to do this for purely just like Nathan Deal did, he vetoed that bill, not for the right reasons. He vetoed it for money, but I don't care. Right. The reality is that he vetoed it. And so, you know, that, I've had conversations where people are like, I never thought about that I could lose customers simply by having men versus women posted on the bathroom. You're likely not going to lose cis customers for putting restroom on a bathroom because they're not going to think about that. You know, there are a lot of restaurants and places in Athens that have gender-neutral single-stall bathrooms that whether they get it from the perspective of gender variance or they're just doing it because it's easier, because it's dumb for four people of, you know, maybe four women to stand in line waiting for the women's room when the men's room has no one in it and all it is a toilet and a sink. Like, maybe you're doing it for different reasons. But I have found myself having those conversations in small doses when I feel like my soul can handle it. And I feel like I get pretty good reception in Athens. I would not have those conversations outside of Athens. I'd have them in Atlanta, maybe in Augusta, but I wouldn't have those conversations in more rural areas. But just the simple fact that on the books, when it comes down to it, regardless of people's attitudes, the law does not protect trans people. I think that there might be city ordinances in Atlanta that might, but the law in the state of Georgia, just in general, you know, if you find yourself, you know, I'm going to go work for a different company, or I'm going to, you know, take a second job over here, or I'm going to do whatever, right? The laws don't really protect queer people like they do in D.C. or New York. I'm not really clear on the laws in Chicago. So, Melvin, you have to tell me whether they do a better job in protecting folks, even if it's unseen. Okay. That's what I would have assumed. But I get concerned about that. I don't know if you guys, if you do.
I try not to worry about things because I find just in general, I worry about everything. So,
right.
I mean, I know that's not the greatest response or whatever, but I honestly just try to worry about things when they come up. I did have a friend who got a job in Florida, and then when they found out he was trans, they rescinded the job offer, and he had no recourse because the laws don't protect him in Florida. I honestly hope that I don't have to get a job in Georgia at any point. I just try to take one day at a time, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, of course. So, Melvin, one of the things that you and I talked about a couple, you know, weeks ago that I think that, you know, you may find interesting to talk about tonight is, and Morgan, I don't know if you've had this similar experience. The South, did you know that there are cities in the state of Georgia that require you to own a handgun? And you,
what?
I mean, you can be exempt from those if for religious reasons or whatever other reason, but that you actually, like, there is a law in the books that basically says that everyone has to have a handgun. The gun culture in the South, coming back to that, particularly after living in D.C., when there were such staunch, like, you couldn't own a gun in D.C. for most of the years that I lived there. There was no legal way to own a handgun in D.C. and have that registered in any kind of way. So moving to the state of Georgia, where there is basically a law that allows you to carry just about anywhere, and then there's a list of places where you can't, airports, most bars, things like that. Was that ever something that either crossed your mind or does cross your mind or that you noticed when you came down south, like the number of guns that you would see around, whether they be in stores or on people?
No, I think one of the things that I was following the campus carry thing, the campus carry bill that Georgia had passed but was vetoed by the governor. I was really following that because I was actually concerned about my safety on campus. You know, if people are allowed to carry weapons on campus, I don't know that I want to go there. Thankfully, it didn't pass, but you're allowed to carry stun guns now on campus, which, you know, is interesting. But I think it really did raise I've never thought about my safety on a college campus before, even in the age of school shootings. You know, I was in high school when Columbine happened. And so school shootings have, you know, and I've only worked in higher ed, you know, since, you know, finishing college. So I've been in higher ed since for as long as I can remember. So, but it's nothing that I really thought about until I was preparing to come to Georgia and hearing about the campus carry bill. And yeah, it's very new to me, the gun culture here, that would actually be a bill that would pass the state legislature.
Yeah, and easily. And I wasn't joking. There is a city in Georgia where they passed a law, I believe, 3 years ago, where there's a law that every citizen must carry a gun, and it's for your protection, and that you can abstain from that for religious reasons or cultural reasons. That there would even be a law on the books that says you have to own a gun.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing.
So, Morgan, I don't know. Did you see any of that kind of gun culture when you moved to Atlanta, or is it just different being in the city versus in a more rural area?
I think it's different being in the city. Again, just like everything else, the only thing that I did notice was like the big giant billboards for gun shows. And for a minute, I thought they were advertisements for the restaurant that's around the corner from me called Gun Show. And then I realized that restaurant is probably like a tongue-in-cheek sort of poking fun at that sort of gun culture here in Atlanta. Because this is like a really – it's like a tapas restaurant kind of thing, but it's you know, you have to make reservations to get in and all that stuff. So and it's very hipstery.
Okay.
So I think if anything in Atlanta, people kind of turned their nose up a little bit at that sort of gun culture. Although there was an incident in my condo building where somebody discharged a shotgun, and the people ended up getting kicked out of here, and they and I think their weapon was taken or something. But the condo building did say, like, it's perfectly legal for you to have guns. Of course it is, because, you know, we're in America. But
right.
It was just an interesting thing for that to even come up, that, like, well, yeah, of course you can have your guns, but, you know, you need to keep them safe and all that other stuff, and obviously don't be shooting them off in the building. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Indoors, shooting, no.
Yeah, right. Please don't.
Exactly. Well, listen, you know, I think that this is one of those conversations that we could probably have for several hours. I do want to know, though, if there are other things that either of you have either that you felt like you had to adjust to from your previous, you know, place of living, or that you're still adjusting to, that is kind of been difficult for you in living in the South now, as opposed to one of the larger cities in the North, or the, you know, the Mid-Atlantic or the Midwest.
I think for me it's mostly along the lines of how I'm dressing. I'm more conscious of that, and not that I'm ever going to, I don't think I'm ever going to sort of acclimate and dress in more gender conforming ways, because that's the culture here. But I think it's definitely more of a conscious choice that I didn't really feel I had to consider as much when I was living in other places. The other piece for me is I feel like my religious community is going to be really difficult to find here, because it's important to me that I attend churches where I am feeling affirmed.
Mm-hmm.
And I also, you know, I grew up in Black churches, and so I also feel more comfortable just in Black churches. And the church I attended in Chicago is very Black. And although it wasn't open and affirming, it was very LGBT open and progressive. I feel like that, you know, if I went to attend a Black church that's at least somewhat affirming of LGBT people, that might be something that I'm going to have to struggle with and maybe sacrifice, or maybe consider just going to church in Atlanta, which is an hour and a half away from me. I think that's going to be adjustment as well.
Morgan, any adjustments or things that you had to adjust to that you want to bring up that we haven't discussed?
No, not really for me. I feel like, you know, I'm still at the point, I've lived here for about a year, but I travel so much that Atlanta is still, for the most part, like, very new and fresh for me. There haven't been any real adjustments that I've made. In fact, like, coming to Atlanta has been really amazing for me, for my mental health, like, especially coming from New York, in part because the weather is so much better, in part because it's so much easier to connect with people here. I don't find that people are running around all the time, so, like, people have time, like, to just get together one night for dinner or something. It's not that serious. It's not a three-month planning process. So Atlanta's actually been, like, a really wonderful place. If we have this conversation again next year, maybe I'll tell you some other things that I needed to adjust to. But honestly, Atlanta has really been an oasis. And if anyone is, like, afraid of the South like I was, you know, Atlanta is definitely a place where you don't need to feel that way. So
awesome. I'm coming out to visit you, Morgan.
Come, please come. You're more than welcome all the time. Yes, please.
Awesome.
Well, listen, I want to thank the both of you for kind of, you know, coming to this conversation with all of your experiences and talking about, you know, the different ways in which you've interacted with the South. Now, having said all of that, before I actually let you go, I want to give each of you a chance, and if there's nothing, there's nothing, but I want to give each of you a chance to plug whatever either you would like folks to know about in your area, maybe places that they may find affirming, or organizations that you really want to give a shout out to, or conferences that you're going to be presenting at, like, whatever the case may be, for folks out there, for our listeners that have heard about some of the great things that you've talked about, or things that you would like to give voice to. So, Melvin, if you have any plugs, please let us know.
Okay. My plug, and I know I've talked about it before, but is the American Transition Project. And if you're not aware of American Transition, it is a project, a documentary, which is a web series that focuses on trans people from marginalized communities, specifically trans people of color and trans people living in rural areas. So American Transition is allowed at work. Besides seeing the series, they travel to communities. They pair viewings with educational pieces around trans people. So if you would like to join the production team, we are looking for people. So we're looking for producers, event planners, community engagement specialists. So if you're interested in doing any of that stuff, you can go to americaintransition.org, or if you just want to look at the web series, or if you want to donate to American Transition because it's dope, you can go there as well.
Awesome. Thank you so much. And we'll definitely have some of that information in the link on the description for the show so that the listeners can get to that way. Morgan, anything that you would like to plug or talk about or mention or shout out to?
Yeah, I actually, I'm not presenting, but I will be attending a conference called Sex Down South, and I've heard really great things about it. It's so it's workshops, education stations, healing spaces, and performances happening here in Atlanta October 13th through the 15th, and it's, I think, just a general sort of like sex education with a social justice bent conference happening down here. And then the second thing is I want to plug Onyx and our bar nights. We have them the first Friday of every month, and they're a whole lot of fun, and they're definitely very, very inclusive. The organization Onyx in and of itself is very inclusive of trans men and has been for quite a while. So come out and have a good time with us on Fridays at the Eagle in Atlanta.
Amazing. I want to thank you both so much again for being a part of this and for taking the time out. I know that you're both extremely busy. So thank you so much for joining me tonight and having this conversation.
Thank you so much for having me.
And I want to thank our listeners once again for tuning in. Thank you so much again. And until next time, this has been The Strong Stance. I'm your host, Eli Strong. Talk to you next time.